Five hosts, four divisions, all battling it out for the Holy Grail of the American Hockey League, the Calder Cup. This is the Holy Grail Podcast. Here are your hosts, Zach Power, Andrew Rinaldi, Corey Swartz, and Dina Weinheimer.
Hello and welcome to the Calder Cup final edition of the Holy Grail here on Field Pass Hockey. Now, this is the episode for June the 9th. As we get ready for Calder Cup finals action, we're going to go around the table like we normally do, and we'll start with an introductory question. And it's a very simple one for Corey this week. Corey, is that a playoff beard I'm spotting?
It is a playoff beard. I decided to let it go after I'm a superstitious person when it comes to the Calder Cup playoffs. And, I think it was the first game against the Rochester series. I had let it grow a little bit before that and they lost. And so I've shaved it at one point in the past. And I was like, you know what? I shaved before this game. Now it has to grow. So this is however long it's been since game one of the Rochester series, not all the way, but you know, I figured I'd let it go. It's a perfect excuse to try to see how much I can do.
And it's going pretty good. I used to have something similar as a kid. My mom, on like Halloween and stuff, she used to like rip open like a tea bag and dip it in water and you put it all around. That's where you kind of got going. This comes from me where I can't. This has been like a week, man. Like, I'm doing pretty good here. But enough of that shenanigans. We have lots of good things to get to this week here on the Holy Grail. And we'll be talking about that playoff series that Corey kind of alluded to between the Coachella Valley Firebirds and the Hershey Bears. But first, we'll start by getting into the news of the week. Lots of good things happening around the AHL, including Rochester's Lawrence Pilut is off to Europe on a two-way deal. Now, he was a really critical piece, and he was very quick going. So, you know, one would kind of have to imagine that this is something that's kind of been brewing in the works. And that D-man scored 3 goals and 25 assists during the 47 games played. A really good up-and-comer for the Buffalo organization, and it's tough to see him go. Another tough to see him go in that category as well, and maybe for some good things, is Greg Cronin of the Colorado Eagles has been promoted to the Anaheim Ducks, where he will now become the bench boss of that organization. And obviously that organization has had a relatively tough couple of years. Didn't really get what they wanted in the draft lottery, I'm sure, but they did get a fantastic coach who just came off of a really good season, as well as a solid playoffs where they got knocked out by someone who's going to the finals. So what can you say?
Yeah, absolutely. And on a more somber note here, we did have some news as Hershey was playing game 6 against Rochester the same day. Willie Marshall, the American Hockey League's all-time leader in goals, assists, and points, and was a charter member of the league's Hall of Fame, passed away this week. He played for a number of teams, you know, most memorably, of course, for me, the Hershey Bears, Pittsburgh Hornets, the Rochester Americans, Providence Reds, and the Baltimore Clippers. Nobody's yet to touch his record in points. He has 1,375 points in 1,205 games played. It was very tough news to get on the same day as Hershey's playoff series. You know, one of the greatest legends in the American Hockey League from a different time. We don't probably won't see anybody like him ever again, I would assume. You know, he's a kind of guy that nowadays would be more than likely to be going on to NHL success. But, you know, just the way it is now, it's a lot different. And, you know, we pass our condolences on to his friends and family in this really tough time.
Yeah, and you know, one of the tributes I've seen on Twitter, he really was the AHL's Wayne Gretzky, right? That guy, and you know what? And good on him too for doing all that. My condolences to his family, his friends, everybody who knew him. And the AHL definitely did lose a key figure over this past week. Moving on now to the Central Division, where Curtis McKenzie has signed a 2-year AHL contract through the 2024-25 season with the Texas Stars. Now, actually, I didn't realize how extensive of a resume he does have 523 AHL games played. In that time, 167 goals, 236 assists. He made his AHL debut during the 2012-2013 season. He did win the Calder Cup with the Texas Stars there in 2014.
Yeah, and another little bit tidbit to pass on. Speaking of players, you mentioned earlier about Lawrence Pilote, who went off to Europe. We've had a few instances of seeing some rumors like that. It was a strong rumor that, you know, current Hershey Bears goaltender Zach Fucale is similarly off to the KHL overseas there next season. That, you know, it was announced that there was a plan in place to sign him over there as soon as, you know, his time with the Bears and the Washington Capitals organization has passed. It kind of leaves Hershey in an interesting but not overly interesting spot, if that makes sense, because, you know, the Bears still have a ton of goaltenders signed in their system. Mitchell Gibson is the one that sticks out to me that, you know, still gives them six goaltenders from top to bottom. Now, obviously, that's assuming that Hunter Shepherd signs with the organization for next season. Not a guarantee, but, you know, certainly, you know, an amicable situation over there too. But of course, you know, with a run like this, he's bound to garner interest, and, you know, there'll surely be some teams jockeying. So it kind of leaves Hershey in an interesting place. It's, you know, one half of guys that, you know, basically split the regular season evenly. I sense a promotion for Clay Stevenson is in the works, though, as a result.
And now you kind of mentioned it a little bit off air and in the chat earlier this week. Was the writing kind of on the wall for Fucale during this?
I think it was there, yes, a little bit. And, you know, it's nothing against him. He's a great guy, you know, fan favorite in Hershey, very beloved there. But, you know, the Capitals have had issues in the past where they've, you know, given, you know, they've had too many goaltenders, right? We saw it with Logan Thompson. It's not a very well-known fact, I think, outside of people that were, you know, have been in Hershey and fans for quite some time, that, you know, Logan Thompson was actually a Bear for a brief period of time. He spent, you know, a whole season with the South Carolina Stingrays. I always remember, because I do have a video of him playing a preseason game for Hershey in the 2019-20 season. But, you know, the Capitals had simply too many goaltenders. Another team offered him a, you know, better contract, that being the, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights, and he worked his way up to, you know, their starter until, you know, he was unfortunately knocked out. It's easy to forget now with where Vegas is at with Aiden Hill in goal. But, you know, I don't think the Capitals are eager to have that sort of situation rear its ugly head once again. So I think that it's kind of, you know, they're playing their chips as well as they can without, you know, hemorrhaging any goaltenders. And it is pretty rare to have, you know, six goaltenders, you know, top to bottom in any organization under contract at the NHL level like that too. So it's truly a testament to, you know, how strong Washington's system is. You know, I think if you're a goaltender, it's a place you want to be in many ways too. So, you know, I think it's just simply a case, you know, like Phoenix Copley before him, there's just too many goaltenders right now.
For sure. I remember seeing him coming out of juniors. There's a lot of comparisons for him to Carey Price. He came out of the World Juniors. He played with the Halifax Mooseheads. Everyone was thinking, oh my God, this is the guy. Things just didn't entirely work out. But things are working out in Vancouver, though, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. The Canucks agreed to terms with defenseman Jet Wu on a one-year, two-way contract. He had 7 goals and 14 assists for 21 points a season ago. So that's another good add to have under their belt here. You know, it's still pretty early in the offseason stage, I guess I would say. You know, we've seen some crazy things, like what went down with Philadelphia and Columbus and in LA earlier today, but it's never too soon to start getting some of those depth players under contract for next season. You know, sometimes your most critical additions happen early on in the summer this time of year. So I think it's good to start locking down some of these guys at this point.
For sure. And some other good news coming out of the NHL now. Of course, the Stanley Cup Finals are going on. It's a great time to recognize that there's lots of development from the AHL now playing in the NHL for the Vegas Golden Knights. 96% of their players have developed in the AHL. The Florida Panthers, 74%, which is still very, very good. Two assistant coaches for the Vegas Golden Knights have Calder Cups They have their names engraved on those. And on the Florida side, because of that whole checkers deal, there's still some of those kind of players hanging around. Radko Gudas, Alex Lyon, as well as their GM. And they do also have an assistant coach as well who has a Calder Cup ring per se. And yeah, it's that averages out to about 87%. So good news coming out of the NHL. And, you know, while they're doing their finals, the AHL finals are just about to get underway. And of course, it's between Hershey and Coachella Valley. I want to start by asking you, Corey, how did the Hershey Bears get here? Recap us that last series, if you could.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Bears got here by defeating the Rochester Americans in the Eastern Conference Finals in six games. Now it's coming up on, you know, about a week, you know, a little less than a week went by the time this episode goes live since that series came to a conclusion. But the Bears dispatched the Americans in six games. Little bit of a tenuous moment there at the end of the series. The Americans won game five at Giant Center to force the series to six games back in their barn. But the Bears got a 1-0 shutout, courtesy of another great bounce back performance for Hunter Shepherd. Anytime he's had a bad performance so far, he's in that series especially, he rebounded with a shutout, right? So there's, you know, no reason to suspect there's a goaltender change on the horizon for the Bears anytime soon, unless something significantly goes off the rails here, I think, in this final round. So the Bears were able to hold Rochester's offense, their, you know, which was their strength, at bay in this series. You know, the most staggering stat was, I think they held Rochester's power play to 1-for-15 overall in the series, which is a huge mark considering that's been Rochester's bread and butter. So, you know, the Bears really showed that their defensive game is on another level, I think. And, you know, six games, Bears haven't quite gotten pushed to the limit in any of their series just yet. But, you know, another triumph for the Bears. Rochester is a team they only played twice, you know, still two more times than they played Coachella Valley ever. But, and certainly a situation where you have to be thankful for what the Bears have accomplished here on both sides of the puck. You know, not only offensively, but their defense has been stupendous so far. So, you know, I think they're just going to probably keep leaning into that here as we get into this Calder Cup Finals. You know, this evening, I guess, is when it'll start, when this podcast goes live.
For sure. And you talked about that road to the Calder Cup Finals. It wasn't one that was paved with gold either. It had definitely had its ups and downs.
Oh, absolutely. There was three different instances in all three series that the Bears have played in where they've had to overcome a 2-0 deficit at some point in a game to win that game. In Charlotte, it was game four. In, you know, the Hartford series, it was game one. And now here in Rochester, that would have been, I believe that was, wow, I'm totally blanking on this. But, you know, at least in those two series, it was a hallmark for the Bears that they were able to come back. And I believe with the Rochester game, that would have been game three, if I'm not mistaken. It was a game four. I'm blanking. Wow, I should know this. Anyhow, you know, it did happen in the Rochester series. They were down 2-0, stormed back in that third period to take a 2-0 deficit, turned into a 3-2 win. So I do remember that much at least. So, you know, it's been kind of an unlikely hallmark for the Bears. They did not do that a ton over the course of the regular season in terms of overcoming deficits. But you hear Todd Nelson's talking about it at times. He talked about it yesterday when he met with the media. By yesterday, I mean Monday, where he said that, you know, this team is beginning closer. These kinds of efforts, the kind of adjustments they've had to make to win these games might not have been able to take place, you know, back around Christmas time, back in the early points of the season. But now this team has had so much time to gel together and to work together. And, you know, they're battling for one another. You know, we've really seen them rise to another level here that, you know, perhaps might have been their downfall at a different point in the season if they had played that way in a playoff game. And one quote of Nelson's that stuck out to me was he said that when they lose these games, he would go to them and he would say, this is how you get eliminated in a playoff series. So it's impressive how much they've taken that to heart and how much that's really kind of helped them gel to this point where they're now four wins away from adding a 12th Calder Cup to the team's legacy.
Yeah, no other sport in the world does 76 games or something like that of pure chaos and then 2 months of war. And you know what? I kind of feel like when Coachella Valley came into this series, you know, they kind of came out of a game where the series started off with two wins for them, combining for 12 goals. And that this is where we've seen the bread and butter of this Coachella Valley team and what they have to offer, which is speed and good puck movement. And let's not count out the Admirals either, who brought up a really good fight, and they kept it close in game one and game two, respectively. And I mean, out-muscled and outgunned, Milwaukee kind of turned on the Jets, really, and they turned it up. And there's no doubt game three and four, and Milwaukee kept them at bay, only keeping them to three goals throughout those two games, as opposed to the 11 in the first two. And so Coachella Valley would kind of slide by Milwaukee in like a 2-1 game. And so like this series really proved at that point to be a lot closer. And where we start to see it break away is in that, you know, sort of final game. And I think the deciding game was one where we started to see the pieces of what each team kind of had to offer. You know, I look back to the second period of that elimination game, and that was kind of Milwaukee's kind of showing of how good they can be. And you also have to remember that they had a lot of reinforcements from Nashville that a lot of other teams, I don't want to say didn't have, but Nashville sent down a lot of pieces down to Milwaukee. And it was a lot closer than what it looked. The 4-3 finisher got them by to where they are today.
Yeah, and you talked about Coachella Valley a little bit. I've, as an Eastern Conference junkie who usually can't stay up late enough to watch many of Coachella Valley's games, my question, Zach, is what do you think that Coachella Valley's biggest strength is? As I've seen, just looking back at all their games that they've, you know, played and won here, you see a lot of games where they score five or more goals, and I started to think it's reminiscent of kind of like Rochester. What do you think is really their strength? Is it just purely goal scoring? Is it a little bit of everything? You know, what particularly do they excel at in your mind?
I think it is goal scoring, and I'll take you back to if people can actually remember this, Coachella Valley long eons ago faced off against the Tucson Roadrunners. And that's how they kind of started out their playoffs, where they started there. And, you know, you could tell that their defense was kind of right. But what we really started to see was their goal scoring prowess. And I say that because in the first 10 minutes, they scored like four goals on them, right? I think it was three or four. And so that was kind of like, okay, these guys know how to bust in and get through. And we started to see more of that, even though that they didn't have the shot clock on their side in a lot of cases or whatnot. And that's kind of what got them through, or almost didn't get them through the first round, because the series was tied at one game apiece, and it's a best 2-3 here, right? And so they did manage to come away by scoring those goals, but that was like your first, oh my god, you almost slipped it there. And we also did see that in the Colorado series a lot, where they kind of came out, and you know, once teams started figuring out their defense, that's when we started seeing the question marks. And it was a totally different team than what we've seen against Calgary, and which is what I'm really expecting out of this Coachella Valley team when they go up against Hershey, because I do think that Hershey and Calgary, I don't want to say are on the same scale, but like, you know, they're kind of in that A tier of teams throughout the regular season. And that's, if you're basing it off of that going into the playoffs, well, that's where I kind of see them. So they went through Calgary. We talked about Milwaukee, and that's what got them here. I'll ask you, Corey, who should we be looking out for on this Hershey team?
It's kind of an interesting question. You told me to start thinking about that before we started recording. And the answer I kind of came back with is almost anybody and everybody at this point. You know, it's such an atypical year. I mean, you think back to, you know, teams of Hershey's past, like the 2010 team, you would say Keith Aucoin, Alex Drew, John Carlson, and you still have some of those big names like Connor McMichael, Hendrix LaPierre, Alexei Protas is another one, but it hasn't just been those guys. And that's kind of what is intriguing about this Hershey team. You know, a lot of the games, like the game winner for Hershey, the series winner was Shane Gersich. It was his first goal of the playoffs, his second playoff goal he's ever scored in his career type of thing. He was the guy that was able to break through. Beck Malenstein's the guy that's, you know, come up with a clutch goal. That fourth line has been so strong. And then when, you know, none of those guys were able to put the puck in the net, you got you know, so many goals from Logan Day, it's hard to keep track of sometimes. And he's a guy who didn't score a single goal from the blue line at all in the regular season. So it's a tough one to pin down one guy to say, hey, this is the guy you should, you know, the bulletin board material. And obviously I would probably look towards a Connor McMichael, Mike Scarbosa, if he were playing, but he's been out injured type of thing. So everybody's kind of been pulling on that rope together. And, you know, I think that Hershey's strength really lies in their defense and being able to counterpunch through that defense. So it's a little bit hard to pick on one guy to say, yeah, this is the guy that you're going to watch bury the puck in the back of the net. You can make some good bets, but, you know, you really can't rule out anybody. And that's what's kind of been awesome about this team.
How much has that injury bug affected Hershey or not at all?
Well, they've done a good job of not showing it. You know, when Mike Scarbosa went down, you know, Henrik Borgstrom stepped up and took his spot in the top line. And he's been, you know, it's been almost seamless. You wouldn't even notice it. You know, Borgstrom came in and his first two goals were game winners. And he's starting to wonder, where was this guy the whole time, you know? And that's what the beauty of it is. When one guy goes down, another guy steps up. You know, it started to show itself a little bit in the Rochester series. In my mind, there was some injury issues, and you know, they moved Ethan Frank around to a different line, and it kind of hurt the composition of those lines, which has been pretty set at times. So, and they kind of went back to that once Borgstrom was healthy again in game six. So my kind of thought towards the end of it is that they'll probably ice a similar lineup. I would like to think if Scarbosa can play, he will, but to my knowledge, I don't believe he's practiced at all since that injury he had at the end of the Charlotte series. So I think you're probably going to see a similar lineup and probably just, you know, no changes across the board in that respect.
And I look at the Coachella roster and I'm thinking, this is a solid team. This is a deep playoff team. And just by looking at some of their names, and I was kind of in a similar boat. I kind of had this sort of thing in my mind where I was like, okay, I need to dummy this list down to say, you know, five. And I was thinking, oh, this is hard to kind of like get down to five, because I'm looking at the team and there's a great mix of some really old talent and some really new talent as well, right? I look at the young guys, you know, there's no denying Cartier. Shane Wright has been here, you know, maybe not the Shane Wright that is advertised completely. I think he's doing pretty good. And then there's Cole Lind, who's absolutely just lighting it up here, right? And I kind of look at him and I'm thinking, oh my God, this guy's got it, right? But there's, you also got those old Wiley vets, right? Like Mike, like look at McCarron. He's been around the league for quite some time. And so that's where I kind of look. And I also look at Joey DeCord, who's really been holding them down to kind of get to this point, right? There was times where I was like, oh, you know, but he's kind of bailed them out of some really tough situations. And I think that what we're going to see is a lot of tough situations in this Hershey series coming up, where I think that they're going to kind of have to go back to their ways against where they were against Calgary again. I'll go back to it, because that's where we've seen some peak hockey. We really did that. Like the overtimes were one thing, right? So that's where I would kind of be looking at for them at least.
And it is interesting too. There's a lot of crossover I noted from that, you know, 1 year dual affiliation with the Charlotte Checkers that, you know, Seattle kind of had in their inception last year. Well, there's a lot of guys there that, you know, I remember from, you know, playing Charlotte eight times last year with the Bears, you know, the DeCords, the McCormicks, the, you know, Alexander Trues of the world. There were all guys where, you know, I'm like, oh man, that guy burned us. Oh man, you know, Joey DeCord stopped so many shots in a couple of games there. You know, it's one of those things. And, you know, they have Eddie Whitco, who, you know, played three seasons with the Bears and, you know, finds himself on the other side now with Coachella Valley. There's a few great stories that's kind of hidden in there, you know, for, you know, a quote, brand new matchup. It's, you know, not so brand new when you look at it, you know, a little bit beneath the surface in those respects.
Yeah, and I remember Eddie too. I think it was the Eagles series. And like once he found his game, I think he scored 3 points that night, like 2 goals and an assist, right? And I think that like once he kind of finds, I think he's like a hidden gem of someone who can step up when needed, right? And it was desperately needed at that time in the Eagles series. And I think that he does have a lot of potential in that. In this series as well, as kind of a dark horse. The you know, there's so many different shining pieces on that squad, you know, you kind of sometimes get lost in that, so that's for sure.
And Eddie's a guy that he reminds me a little bit of Dylan McIlrath in a lot of ways, that he's just one of those guys where it's like you don't want to be, you know, if you see him bearing down on you for a hit. We saw in the Rochester series in Game 5 where, you know, Dylan McIlrath just steamrolled someone, you know, it was such a heavy hit that the guy's helmet flew up and went over the glass and into the seats type of thing. So you got a couple of those heavy quantity guys. And, you know, just from having seen Eddie for 3 seasons in Hershey, he is a guy that, you know, he lays the boom down with heavy hits. It seems like they finally figured out that he's should be playing one position, and that's playing defense. I mean, he wasn't bad as a fourth liner. The Bears kind of had dealt him a tough hand, I think, with the way their roster situated his last year. But, you know, he was playing forward, and he was, you know, pretty great on in terms of, you know, his forecheck and, you know, how he was able to pressure, you know, on the forecheck and things like that. So I really do like that he's found a home there. I'm happy for him, but, you know, this series maybe not a little bit less, you know. You know, I'm saying that now, but when the puck drops, it's going to be a different story. But, you know, it seems like he's really fit in there. And there's, like you said, there's a lot of great stories there for some of these guys. You know, we haven't even talked about Andrew Podorowski, who's, you know, in his third straight Calder Cup finals appearance. Like, somebody's got to stop this guy eventually in his teams that he's on. So
he's Pat Maroon.
Exactly.
He is the Pat Maroon. And I was trying not to bring him up because I know that Andrew's, I was waiting to see how long before someone brought it up. And I was waiting for Andrew to come by in the chat because I think he can hear the Podorowski and it's, oh, kind of deal, right?
It's a bat signal.
Yeah, it's the bat signal. And he's had a lot of clutch moments. I think in that Calgary series, he had the deciding game there, the winner, and he was solid in that last series as well. Again, and I'm sure that you kind of look to some of that Calder Cup experience as well, right? Someone who knows how to take a run deep, right? And so that's where I kind of look for him. And you know, there is a lot of good stars on both of these clubs, Corey, but like, what does Hershey have to do to win?
To me, it's that team defense we were talking about before, that, you know, Coachella Valley, what intimidated me about it when I was looking at their stats, you know, being kind of an outsider to their game in that respect, is that this team hangs a lot of goals up on their opponents. You know, I think I counted, you know, 9 of their 18 games, 8 or 9 games at least, that they had scored like 5 or more goals, right? And that's kind of been the big key for Hershey just throughout this playoff, is that they've gone against some very high-flying offensive teams. Rochester, obviously, you know, had a boatload of goals going into that series, you know, hanging up a lot on the Marlies and, you know, some teams that preceded them. As had Hartford, they were a team that kind of steamrolled their way into this point, beating Providence, which, you know, still seems unfathomable in a sense, even when I look back at it now. But to me, Hershey's just got to be able to continue doing their hard work in limiting offense, whether it's blocking shots, you know, keeping guys to the outside. You know, they really just seem to find this formula, and I expect there to be some adjustments be made, like how it was in the Rochester series. They lost Game 1, they had to make some on the fly adjustments, and, you know, bounce back in Game 2 in a lot of ways. So I think if they're able to enforce that style where, you know, it's kind of this war of attrition where, you know, they can get 1, 2, 3 goals and, you know, limit them to just 2. I mean, Hunter Shepard's only given up, you know, 2 or more goals twice in these playoffs. I think that's how they stand a really good chance of winning this series. And they've been able to do it. But, you know, just like with Rochester, it's a different kind of team. You talked about how all the veterans, the young talent, they have one of those perfect championship matrixes type of thing, in that they have, you know, just such a solid composition. So I think it's really going to represent Hershey's biggest challenge yet in that respect. And it'll be interesting to see if it can hold together in that sense. But, you know, I do think that for them, I worry about them only in the sense when they give up the first goal. Just because, you know, you're asking to not only hold them at bay, but you're also asking for a comeback. They've been able to do it a couple of times, but I'm like, I say to myself, make it easy on yourselves when this happens, right? Like, nobody wants to be chasing a game 2-0, anything like that all the time. You know, as the teams get better, it's just less likely it's going to happen. Now, the flip side with Coachella Valley is that they have given up a few goals at times too, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen every single time, right? Like we saw with Milwaukee, they ended up getting pretty close at a 4-3 final score in Game 6 when they, you know, were eliminated. So they did get some scoring there. So I think for the Bears, it's going to be capitalizing on the opportunities, not throwing duds like they did in Game 5 and Game 1 against Rochester, but just kind of bringing that complete game, but starting on defense is the most important aspect for me.
For sure. And I was kind of thinking about Coachella Valley too. And the first thing I kind of thought of is how offensively heavy this team is, right? I feel like there's a lot of times where even the defense is kind of playing a little more offensively than what they almost should be at times. And I think that's kind of my big thing for them is, you know, let's keep the offense there, but let's hold the line on the defense a little bit here. So there was often times where I feel like they were almost letting their opponents kind of dump it in or like get so far hoping that they would dump it in. I think that one of the big things for them is they need to hold the line because I think Hershey will hold them accountable for it. And because I think once Hershey kind of gets in, they kind of have this lock in, right? I feel like there's a lot of times where they kind of set up this offensive zone. I don't want to say trap, but like there's definitely a certain way that they'll kind of get defense moving in ways that they probably shouldn't. And I think that's one of the true things that you need to remember with this team is you need to stick to what you know, right? And let's stick to our own game defensively at that, right? Let's make sure that we're holding the line here at the blue line. We're making sure that they're not coming in. And then using that to kind of push forward on offense like they've been doing all season, all playoffs long, because it's been proven, I think it has been proven, that their offense isn't the problem. It really boils down to their defense, which almost lost them the series against Tucson and at times almost lost them the series against Milwaukee as well, right? They did tighten that up heavily as much as they could in that Calgary series. But, you know, I kind of got to think about it and say, you know what, let's hold the line on the defense and let's make sure that Hershey just doesn't get into the zone.
I agree. And that's kind of my big thing with Hershey is that, you know, I worry about them offensively at times. Now, they've proven me wrong a few times. You know, you get some goals from unlikely sources. And, you know, when everyone's pulling on the rope like that, that makes them a wily opponent, even if they're not scoring a boatload of goals. It was funny looking at the stats for it because, you know, Coachella Valley's top scorer has almost double. I think it's Cole Lind, if I'm not mistaken. Has almost double as many points as Hershey's leading scorer, Alexei Protas. I think it was a 23-12 margin, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. And it's just one of those ones where it's like, wow, that's an impressive stat. Obviously, Coachella Valley's had the hard route, so to speak, of, you know, playing the max amount of games as well as the play-in round that has been a very impressive element of them getting to this point. But you almost kind of wonder to yourself, is this sustainable for them, right? Like they've been pushed to the brink, you know, they've shown that when they get pushed to the brink, they push back, right? Like it's an impressive trait to have. We always just kind of wonder on both sides, will they be able to sustain this? Is it going to be too much of a shell shock playing against, you know, a different kind of beast? Now, obviously with the Pacific and the Atlantic, they're probably the most isolated divisions in the league in that there's not really a lot of crossover between, you know, there's more crossover between like the Central or the North than there is really the Atlantic and the Pacific. To the point where I would guess that in this era, this is probably the first matchup of a Pacific and an Atlantic team ever, if it, you know, my memory, you know, is not failing me. And obviously, I don't know everything. At least for Hershey, it's their first Pacific division. It's their first. It was a great fact. Jesse Liebman from the Bears staff came up with this stat. Now, the Bears have not played a California-based team in 55 years since 1968.
Wow.
Is your static. It was another team called the San Diego Gulls. No relation of any kind to the modern team, of course. But it's been that long. So you wonder, you know, obviously there's some known quantities to them team-wise. You know, we've seen Dan Bylsma coach a Pennsylvania-based team before. You know, some very familiar elements there, but it's a different matrix. It's a different combination. Every team formulates, you know, he doesn't have a Sidney Crosby in this instance, you know. Obviously, Andrew Podorowski is not too far off in some ways at this level. So, you know, it's one of those things, it's known, but yet it's unknown. I just wonder which team is going to be the first to take advantage of that versus how the series plays out long term. Like, who's going to make that adjustment that's going to, you know, turn a 1-0 series lead into a deficit, or, you know, if someone, you know, heaven forbid, gets overconfident possibly. So that's just kind of two scenarios that's kind of rattling around in my head in thinking about this, just as it's such an unusual matchup.
For sure. I'll tell you a good story about the San Diego Gulls right before we finish the episode. But, you know, I was kind of thinking about that too, you know, how much of an effect does this kind of long schedule have on the Coachella Valley Firebirds? And, you know, they were in a relatively tough division, but, you know, they also had San Diego in that division as well. So how tough can it be? There's kind of two sides to that coin, I guess. But yeah, that's where I was kind of thinking. And like, you also have to think that these guys have been tested, and I'm sure us as a podcast will be back before this elimination game. I hope we will. but, you know, and that's one thing about Coachella Valley, and you said it best. When they get pushed to the limit, they often will push back. And they dominated against Tucson, and they dominated against Calgary in both of those elimination games. Well, I don't want to say they dominated, because that was a truly spectacular game. But, you know, and that's a great point as well. So if this series goes deep, there's kind of two sides to that coin, you know, and one side, Coachella Valley has pushed back. On the other side, this has been a long, long year for them. And we also, I think it's great to acknowledge too, that these guys started out the season on the road. Remember, these guys spent like the first like 3 months on the road, and they played like all road games for the most part. They played one or two games at the Climate Pledge, and that was it. So
home games, in air quotes.
Yeah. And I mean, like, again, the Pacific Division doesn't really do many favors in terms of travel either, right? It's not entirely close. I guess none of them really are, but it doesn't really help it either that they're not all in New York State for the most part. But here we
certainly, they certainly don't have any Lehigh Valley or Wilkes-Barre kind of trips, you know, as in that same relationship as Hershey does. That's for sure.
For sure. For sure. I do want to talk about that playoff schedule, because there's a pretty solid one for the finals. One cool thing that I almost thought that they would kind of do, all the games start at 7 local. I kind of thought that they would kind of do like an NHL sort of deal where, you know, we might get like a couple like half early, half late kind of starts. No. We're all starting at 7 local. So 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific on June 8th. That first game is game one in Coachella Valley. Game two is on June 10th, 7 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Eastern, rather, 7 p.m. Pacific. Let me get that right. Nets in Coachella Valley. Things will shift over to the Giant Center. And that's where we see in June 13th. That's 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific. That's in Hershey. The next game, also in Hershey as well. So it's a 2-3-2. June 15th, 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific at the Giant Center. Now, the next ones are, if necessary, folks, June 17th, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific at the Giant Center. Then we go back to Coachella Valley again, if necessary, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific local time. And that's at Coachella Valley on the 19th of June. And on the 21st of June, wow, it's relatively late. But it's a 10 p.m. start for the Eastern time, folks, 7 p.m. Pacific. And that's in Coachella Valley. A lot of long nights for Hershey fans, I think.
Bags are already forming under my eyes just hearing the words 10 p.m. start time. I've done it before to stay up, you know, when the Flyers go out west and stuff like that. You know, I've tried to tune into those games, but like I tried to stay up for the Milwaukee series finale last night. I fell asleep in the third period, man. Like, this is going to be hard for me.
And of course, obviously the stats out there, but this isn't the furthest AHL Calder Cup ever. And this isn't the biggest leap in time ever. It's tied at three time zones in difference. Actually, no, it is the biggest leap in time, I do think, because I think there's a couple half hour time zones in that other 2014 series. But yeah, definitely the up there on one of the furthest, you know, something that just may be a stretch are our opinions. But I want to ask you, Corey, are you given a series prediction or are you going to veto this question?
Well, I've thought about it long. I've thought about it hard. I'm taking Hershey in six.
Okay.
A little bold. I know, you know, I've seen a few predictions out there, and to me, it just, I've seen this team with their defense. They've shut down, you know, if there's any team that coming into the conference finals was as potent of offense, I feel like Rochester may have been the most potent offensive team that we've seen. And, you know, Hershey, you know, credit to them where it's due. They took their lumps in the first game. And, you know, it was that response that was what sold me. Is the Rochester series was like, I said, this is where their strategy is going to make or break. Not that it's not, you know, putting any slight towards what Hartford or Charlotte did. They both had tough roads to this point and were true tests in their own way. But those tests, you know, all combine in some ways to me to say, if this Hershey team can, you know, A, sweep a Hartford team that beat the top team in the East, and, you know, B, stop a Rochester team that was absolutely money. I mean, Yuri Kulich had a goal in every single game leading up to the conference final, and he only scored one goal the whole series, and it was a preventable goal. If, you know, I'm sure Hunter Shepard would tell you that he, you know, could have had the goal that he scored type of thing. It was just one of those things where it was remarkable, and, you know, I think it gets kind of swept under the rug a little bit overall on how well Hershey's system has been disrupting teams. And for me, I just see that, you know, once the Bears kind of say, you know, if they can kind of get over the hump a little bit early and say, hey, we can do this type of thing, you know, get a little success. You know, my big thing is that, right, like the Bears haven't won a game in the Calder Cup Finals since 2010 when they won it last, right? So I've been sitting here like, you know, okay, I'm going to feel confident once that monkey's off my back type of thing. But once the Bears kind of get there and, you know, see that, I can sense that they would smell blood in the water. I think Coachella Valley is going to push hard. And, you know, obviously, you know, they play well on home ice. They've gotten a lot of their wins at home, as Hershey has. But Hershey's been a beast, a different kind of animal almost on the road as well, 6-0. That's, you know, kind of an underappreciated stat, at least, you know, by the rest of people. Not to me, because the road was always kind of a little bit of a sore spot the team got better at as the year went on. So I just really feel that Hershey is going to, you know, find that element to their game. And not that it's going to be too much for Coach Hell, but it's going to be probably a mighty test for them in that respect, just because both those series were really similar in that respect. You know, Calgary was just as good and lost by one goal type of thing. You know, we talked so much about how strong their goaltending's been. But, you know, Hershey, for my money, I think has just the most well-rounded team that I've seen in a long time. And I think it's going to be close. I think we would be talking about a game seven for quite some time leading up to this. But I think that Hershey may be able to pull this off in six.
So I'm kind of... I do think that this is going to go deep, right? And there's only one answer when it goes deep. And to me, that's Coachella Valley. And they've kind of proven that before. And I think that this is going to go seven games. And I think that it's going to be Coachella Valley. But I think this is going to be a lot closer of a series than what we were kind of expecting. You know what I mean? Like, I do think that this is kind of be going to be one of the things where they're going to be looking at a way to kind of bust through Hershey for a lot of it. And I think that they're going to try to find a way to crack that coconut, really, to be honest. And so do I think that it's going to be a blowout? No. I think that it's just going to be a seven-game series where it's going to be Coachella Valley taking it there. So I hope for your sake that you that I'm wrong, because I think that deep down he's going to kill me. But otherwise, I think that for sure, I do think that it's going to be Coachella Valley taking this one.
Well, I mean, it's a fair point. That's kind of the counterpunch here, right? Like I'm obviously, you know, I obviously have my chocolate covered glasses on all the time. But, you know, the thing that kind of always sticks out to me is that, you know, that's the big thing with Coachella Valley, right? Is that they have such a veteran laden, experience driven team that, you know, that's the one element I think they do have over Hershey, is that to my knowledge, I believe that, you know, the handful of players that have been beyond, you know, a few rounds, especially Calder Cup winners, has been few. I mean, you think of, like, you know, the guys like Aaron Ness, Dylan McElrath, and, you know, Sam Annis come to mind. Only one of those guys has a Calder Cup, and that's Dylan McElrath. But, you know, the kind of good news is that, you know, him and Todd Nelson have been there before. They've done it before with the Grand Rapids Griffins. But, you know, that is the element that kind of gets me, is that, you know, I think if it turns into a one-shot, two-shot kind of game, that's where I think Coachella Valley can really turn the series in their favor. And I agree with you, though. I want Hershey in six, because I think if it's in seven, I'm concerned a little bit more, if I'm, you know, speculating that, just because like we said, they've been there, they've done that, they've pushed, they get better, it seems like, when it goes the distance. Yep. So that's kind of my, you know, alternate hot take, is that I want it in six because I don't want to go to seven. We'll put it that way.
Well, folks, any final thoughts before we leave you to enjoy game one, Corey?
I'm nervous, man. I'm bubbling with excitement, but I am nervous. I have not been this nervous about a game in a long time. So I'm excited. I'm optimistic. But, you know, you always have to keep it measured and, you know, just hoping it's some really good hockey the whole way out.
I remember I was in St. John's in 2014 for the Calder Cup. And that was the only time that I was old enough to kind of, you know about it or whatever. But there was a strange buzz. There was a strange buzz. And there was kind of that same sort of buzz in 2019 when the Newfoundland Growlers of the ECHL won it. And, you know, you just kind of felt this overall excitement of everybody remembers where they were the night that they won. Right. And I'm sure for a lot of Hershey Bears fans, they kind of feel that exact same way. I'll leave the episode with one story before we go. During the 1960s and 70s, the Boston Bruins actually had a strange sort of affiliation with the San Diego Gulls. And they actually did this for one reason, which I think was part of it. The San Diego Gulls transformed their arena to have the same dimensions as the Boston Garden. So when you got called up from San Diego, you actually went to the same playing surface dimensions, which everybody knows the Boston Garden was notorious for its terrible ice dimensions. But San Diego mirrored that. And that's the story of that. And they're actually playing in the same sort of arena that has been since very refurbished. But yes, that's my one good story about San Diego. Well, folks, this has been quite the episode. We hope that we kind of enlighten you on what the series is about to be for the Coachella Valley Firebirds taking on the Hershey Bears. And again, we really do want to thank you so much for tuning in. In the meantime, you can check out some of our other podcasts. Join Matthew Harding and Jason Miles as they break down the ECHL's Wichita Thunder. And they'll talk to some of the team's legendary players on the Rolling Thunder bi-weekly podcast. Another solid podcast. Alexandra Ackerman hosts Syracuse Speaks. Of course, she kind of gave a little bit of a eulogy towards the end of their season, which did kind of end at the hands of the Rochester Americans. But it was a very well-fought series as well. I do recommend you listening to that podcast as well. And you can also check us out on Twitter at The Holy Grail. And Grail is spelled G-R-A-H-L. And you already knew that. On behalf of all of us here at Field Bass Hockey and The Holy Grail, I want to thank you so much for tuning in. And we'll see you again next time.
This has been the Holy Grail Podcast. Have a question or a topic suggestion? Hit us up on Twitter or drop us an email. For the latest news across the American Hockey League and the rest of minor league hockey, download the Field Pass Hockey app, now available in the Apple and Android app stores.